Right, we're on, mate.
Hey, welcome to the Jack Johnson podcast. Just want to say a big shout out to everyone who's been listening and subscribing and passing it on. Absolutely overwhelmed with over 1,000 listens or views, and like I say, appreciate the support. I finally got myself a decent mic, and a big part of that is to my guest right now, and that is my man Benjamin. What's happening, brother? How you doing?
Hi, nice meeting, mate. It's nice to have a catch up again.
That's it. Well, what we've been doing, we've been sat in a lovely cafe in town, just near Piccadilly Station, and I wish we would have pressed record about 2 hours ago, because we've just been putting the world to rights. But and then we realised, oh yeah, we've got to record a podcast. Basically, we, just for the listeners, me and Ben, we met on set a little while ago now, didn't we, for Video Inc. I'm trying to remember the first one.
Yeah, was it? It wasn't Atomic Ounce, was it? Or was it before that? The one where you were dressed up in like the kind of... No, I met you before that.
Before that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Before Blackpool.
There was the Antique one. Was it This Is Manchester? Were you on that one?
Yeah, I was on it for a day, wasn't I? Yeah.
It. No, it might have been This Is Manchester.
Because what it was, because I do a lot of shoots for Video Inc. And just want to say a big shout to Adam and Ollie, Michelle, Daniel Sun, all the gang. And basically I saw this young man rock up, and I thought, ooh, he's new. And we just clicked straight away. Like, very fortunate, obviously, doing what I do and get to meet some really cool, creative people. And you just realise, like, oh, we have mutual friends, and then you see each other on the next one. And fortunately now, obviously, you've done quite a lot of shoots with Video Inc, and obviously I do as well. How did you get to know those guys?
I think they came to... when I was still in my... my last couple of months of university, I think they came looking for students that would be interested in going on to, like, giving them general assistance, like a personal assistant for the actual shoots.
Yeah.
Because Danielson was actually originally from Futureworks. He was a year before me.
Ah, right, okay.
So he obviously suggested, like, oh, well, why don't you check out my university, see if there's someone there that would be interested. And they came and did a standard presentation where they went through, like, the treatment, like, you know, what Video Inc is, what they do, and all this lot.
Yeah.
And me, along with two other peers, went on their very first shoot, which I think was a Memo Crashers shoot. I think it was one in an attic somewhere, like in some, like, it was cold as anything shoot, but it was in like some foundry of a either semi shut down or semi running mill. For the life of me, I don't remember where it was exactly. Well, I remember it would have been around like early January, February, so it's still a little bit chilly.
Yeah.
But I remember that being the first shoot with them. I obviously, like, hit off quite well. We were just doing some of the behind the scenes filming of it.
Cool.
And then I got a callback for, I think, the shoot after, which was, I think, This Is Manchester, where me and you met.
So that would have been my
second shoot with them.
Oh, wow.
Where I was just a general assistant for that one. I was doing a little bit of the behind the scenes stuff, but I was also just quite hands on and giving the assistance with X, Y, and Z when it came down to stuff on the set, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I came to know the guys, and obviously, like, you know, got along like Adam and Oliver, and like the banter that's run on set and everything.
Oh, I say I've been very fortunate over the years to work with some pretty cool crews and pretty cool people, but honestly, like, they are just on a different level. And again, we've kind of all started at the same time. I remember the first video we did was in like this abandoned like asylum, basically, in Liverpool, and it was just like, I remember like messaging my mates, like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm filming in this like abandoned, you know, place, and my mate's from Liverpool, and he was like, no way. He's like, mate, that's well haunted. And Adam finds the most outrageous, obscure locations like ever, but that's again why he's so creative and so good at what he does. And again, I think it's like anything, you know, finding your tribe, and straight away, like, we click straight away, but weird and wonderful. And like I say, 10 years later, we're still working together, so we must have been doing something right. And yeah, it was just like I say, it was nice to get to know you. And like I say, now we're, you know, obviously good mates now and working kind of. Also, I just want to say congrats, because you've literally just finished your degree, haven't you?
That was finished in April or Marchish, but then I've, because somehow I'm missing my graduation ceremony. I don't know how that one happened. I think I was helping a director for a shoot, and I was helping him with some of the producer work. And I was just scrolling through Facebook and all my mates were like, oh, I've graduated. I was like, hang on a minute, when did this happen?
But do you know what? That's the perfect example of obviously why you're doing what you're doing and why you'll go on to do big things, mate, because you're learning on set and you're doing on set and you're practical. And that's, again, that's how I didn't do my degree in this, but I learned early doors to, you know, the only way you learn is by doing, and especially on set and doing it, and that's the best place to be, really.
I found the degree. I loved like what I did at university, don't get me wrong, and I'd say university is, I'd be a strong advocate for university, but not for the degree. I would never say that piece of paper will ever get me a piece of work. It's more the experience and contacts that you meet for it.
Course,
if it weren't for my university, I wouldn't have been on the video ink shoot. I wouldn't have worked with a vast amount of people that I did work with, because a lot of them would submit sourcing for crew, and they'd source that through, like, you know, obviously MMU, Salford, but also Futureworks gets a good shout out, because quite a lot of people mention it here and there.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have had those opportunities to go on those shoots or learn what would be classed as the industry standard of equipment.
Yeah.
As for the paper itself, I could have gotten the lowest mark for all I cared.
Yeah.
It was the end result of the people I knew, contacts that I made, and the friends that I've grown over those 3 years is what I'd say is the strongest benefit.
Yeah.
Without that, it's a very interesting way of getting into the industry, because it's then just relying on your ability to adapt and to get along with people and have them give you that guidance to move on to the next shoots.
Definitely.
I have no idea what the process would have been for me if I was to have not done uni. So it's quite fascinating, because you've not done the whole
That was the thing for me. You know, I went and did my degree in, you know, BSc Honours in PE and Youth Sport. You know what I mean? I was a PE teacher, and I was very lucky. It's something I obviously always wanted to do, kind of deep down, but again, it was just that, you know, logical thinking, go and do your degree, become a PE teacher, you know, get a regular job and, you know, do well. But it was, it was something I did a shoot with, my first shoot was with Man City and Umbro, which was like more modelling stuff. But again, it's the same thing. It's just, you know, you're working behind the scenes with people who, you know, are very good at what they do, and went in at a very high level. And I remember chatting to a makeup artist then. She was just like, you've got a really good look, and, you know, you should think about doing this, because, you know, you could get some work. And it wasn't until I kind of really did a big job on The Village. I did like 8 days, and that's when I really kind of thought, wow, I wouldn't mind doing this as a full-time job, because, again, you're just learning off, you know, some of the best in the business at a very high level. And again, I was just a sponge. I just kind of, you know, chatted to everyone from the gaffer to, you know, to the makeup artist, to the chefs, everyone, and obviously the actors and the people who was working alongside. And yeah, it just kind of gave me this, it was an opening to this weird and wonderful world that we're a part of now. And again, it's like anything, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And you get to meet these people, and it just gives you a creative buzz that you just can't replicate anywhere else. And obviously I'm still doing it now, and obviously doing this podcast is a big thing for me, because I've wanted to do it for years, but again, it's just that thing of, you know, you're worried, is it going to be good, is it going to be this, going to be that, you know, do I have the right equipment? But you just learn as you go, and you just got to, like you say, jump in, haven't you, and just give it a go. And I think we're all very similar. Like we were talking before about, you know, being creative and working with different types of people, and, you know, you get to, that's what's great about this job, you get to work with so many different people from different backgrounds, and but you're all kind of in it for the same reason. You know, you're there creatively to push the boundaries and help each other, and the common goal is to create something unique. And I think you definitely do that on video ink jobs, because Adam's ideas are just, you know, so
always out there.
Just absolutely nuts. You know, some of the stuff I've done for him over the years, blooming heck, mate. You know,
and the location's
I mean?
Always weird as different.
They're just, you know, and that's why I love working with him, because, you know, fortunate in working with some cool people, but, you know, it can be very samey and very, you know, kind of like, right, this is what we're doing, and, you know, we're doing it, you know, standard two, you know, two cameras, very easy, like, we're one shot here,
it can get a bit dry.
It can do, mate.
It's always pick and mix as to where you go. I always find it quite amusing, because I think there's the, well, was it, Atomic Ounce shoot we were on. Like, that was probably the most weirdest location, because it kind of like felt like something out of like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Because like
yeah.
the building was just like really decrepit and
it's
weird.
It's fantastic.
It's a wonderful location.
The place where we shoot there, it's amazing. They've done, I think, Peaky Blinders recent series. There's tons of, there was a Netflix show, like it's Safe House or something like that was there. It's amazing as well, because when you're going through that building, you end up finding like scripts and, you know, kind of shot lists and stuff like that, and you think, oh, blimey, they've shot there. And I say it's down to Adam and, you know, his amazing team who get to, you know, and in Manchester as well, we're so lucky to have the backdrop that we have here.
There's a lot of surprising like areas you can film in Manchester, which I didn't even realise existed.
Yeah.
But like every time you walk past the building, you're like, oh, that looks a little bit of a rundown area. Like a day or two from there, you'll find like someone's filming there or something crazy like that, and you're like, oh bloody hell, that thing looks like a death trap. And then you're like, it changed your perspective on stuff like that. Stuff that people would be like, oh no, that's like health and safety, asbestos, all this lot. Creatives were like, you know, I'd love to film in there.
Yeah.
Irrespective, I want to film in it.
I think that's it, and I think for anyone, you know, listening to this who is thinking about, you know, getting into it, or, you know, or generally in any day of life, it's, you know, sometimes like we were saying before, it's taking a step back and having a bit of perspective, and also kind of seeing the beauty in things that, you know, the norm probably you wouldn't really think, oh, we could do this. And I think when you're creative, you do have that different outlook, and you should tap into that. And again, I'm trying to encourage people to do, and I'm myself creatively always pushing the boundaries and doing stuff, because, you know, that's how we move the needle, that's how we push things forward, is by, you know, looking at something or doing something that, you know, is really difficult, or things, you know,
seeing potential in,
yeah,
something
that's
that no
it and just giving it a go, you know, trying. And I was talking before, I'm still working on this this documentary for Brendan, and I was chatting to Ben about it, because, you know, obviously he's a filmmaker in his own right, and, you know, just getting a few tips about editing and, like you say, starting the narrative and, you know, basically like a normal story, and a start, middle and end. And got some great advice about, you know, just having a deadline, really, isn't it? Because again, you could end up going for hours, couldn't you? And like with that, you know, I've got hours and hours of footage, but you've got to, you know, put a deadline on it. And I think that's, like I say, great advice for someone or anyone. Because
the hardest part I found when it came down to projects is it's not necessarily the editing of it or finishing the product, it's actually starting.
Yeah.
Getting the actual mentality to start it is so difficult.
Mm.
You have to. I find like the best thing is if you're in an environment where you're either working with someone who's of the right creative mindset so you can bounce off them, or somewhere which is away from anything that would be like a leisure activity, so you force yourself into that work mentality. Because once you make that first step, powering through it is absolutely easy and simple to do, but it's that immediately starting to from ground one, that's from scratch moment, is the tough part.
Yeah.
But then from there onwards, it's just very like, it naturally just like comes to you. But it's again that one thing, when you put it down, you're like, oh, I'll come back to that. Coming back to it's hard as well. Yeah. It's the starting with these projects,
very,
is the tough part.
Very much so. And I think that's like with anything, there's a lot of, you know, even this podcast, you know, I wanted to do it for absolutely years, and it was only until, you know, I kind of thought, right, I'm here now. And you go back to listen to episode one, you'll realise it's, you know, as I say, sat in my old room in my brother's house, you know what I mean? Just like so elated to have finished the shoot, but then just wanting to get this podcast started. And like I say, now it's, you know, say I think this is our 14th episode now, so it's just like, it's not, and again, now we've got a proper mic, and, you know, eventually I say I'll get in a studio and film it all. And but it's like anything, it takes time, and you have these grand ideas, but the most important thing is starting it.
Yeah,
and
the foundations.
Yeah.
It's the hardest part.
And it's so true. I think that was the thing for me with the doc. It was, I did that, I started it, and then through no fault of my own, just what happens sometimes with software, it got re-updated, and then I lost everything. And even with some of the footage, I lost the memory card, and I was devastated. I was absolutely, you know, thought, what am I going to do? But luckily I shot it on my phone as a second camera, because again, it was just me shooting it, and now that's going to be the main footage. And I think maybe that was a little part of it as well. That was a bit, you know, kind of, you know, woe is me, and like, oh, it's not going to be as good as it, you know, first I thought it was going to be. But at the end of the day, you know, I've got footage, I know what I'm doing up to a point. And again, I'm very much so learn as you go, which I think everyone needs to do, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially in this industry, you've just got to, you have an idea, just run with it, because you can have 101 ideas and try and do 101 projects, but you've just got to focus on one, really, and that's where I'm at the moment. You know, it's focused on that and just blitzing through it. And it's interesting you're saying that, being in the space that you do it, because I used to do it in my bedroom. And I've realised now that's probably not the best place to do it. Do you know what I mean?
It's very difficult because your mind immediately wants to like distract you from something. Because unless you start it and you immediately get into it, your mind's like, oh, well, that thing you want to do, well, why don't we do this for a little while? And then we'll work into it, where you have to be really stern with yourself, go, no, I'm starting it now. Because if you don't, you'll procrastinate for a good couple of hours. It's very easy to. There's a book I was reading, I can't remember for the life of what it was, but it's about how your environment can really influence the way your mindset is when it comes down to trying to work. So obviously it's things like, you know, if you've got like a messy environment, you'll feel like a little bit chaotic and like you'll feel like things are organized when it comes down to it. If it's an area that you would use for recreation, your mind will naturally want to do that over work.
Yeah, so
a dual association with it, and it's taking away the association of one thing from a room to be able to focus on a big thing. That's why it's easy to go out places and work, rather than it is to be in your own little area and working from home, we'll say, because you want to get away from that, you want to escape that, and your escapism is true recreation, because it's my house, it's where I come home, it's where I relax and chill out. To force yourself to work through that is so difficult, and it takes a level of like that mental it's like that mental dedication or that training to get yourself to that.
Yeah,
point.
You've got to have that mindset, haven't you? And it's funny as well, because the poster for this film is basically Brendan's in the ring behind, and there's a statement on the wall in Champs Camp, and it's basically about discipline and mindset, and if you have that, you will have world champion at the end of your name, and I was just kind of going around the gym, because fortunately I've been able to train there, and just want to say a big shout out to everyone at Champs Camp, because it, you know, really kind of changed my life going in there, and I don't say that lightly. You know, I was going through a bit of a tough time and I needed to focus, and again, that's why sport's so good, and being creative is, you need that outlet, and that's what this is. That's what I knew I needed to do, and I knew straight away when I just took this picture, kind of, I was just snapping away, and I was taking a picture of the poster, but just so happened that Brendan was in the background looking my way, really, and it's totally out of the blue, but it's just, you know, when you just get the perfect shot and you just think, I didn't plan that. And that's why it's so important to, like I was saying to my mate Tom, who's just got a camera now, and he's getting used to, you know, taking pictures, and sometimes it'll be a bit distorted, or, you know, sometimes you don't get the exact shot. It's so important just to take your camera out, and like with anything though, just practice and practice and practice, because when you get comfortable, when you might just by accident, you get those perfect moments and capture those perfect moments, but you're never going to get that if you don't, say, practice or do, you know, work on your on your craft, basically. And this is what this is working on my craft, you know what I mean? And I'm a big believer in, you know, keep going, keep working hard and keep learning as you go, because we do, every day is a school day. It's not, you know,
you never stop learning.
No, and I think, you know, anyone who I've met, especially, you know, some of the older actors on set, they've always said that to me. They've always been, you know, I like what you did there, or like, oh, when I've asked them about advice, and, you know, you can all learn off each other, you know what I mean? You're never done. And that's why it's so important to pass on positive vibes and positive kind of tips and tricks. And this is why, one of the main reasons I wanted to do this, because I think it's really important to chat to people. Like, say we're in the industry, we're on the ground floor, and
to get that mixture of perspective.
Yeah, very much so.
Are you at that point yet where people are coming to you and asking you advice on stuff and see you as like a professional, and you're like, man, I don't even class myself as anywhere close to that yet.
Yeah, man.
But they see, like, they'll look at you as like somebody who like knows what they're doing, has like got their shit together for what they're doing on set and everything, and you're like, really? I look like I know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
like,
no,
it's a really weird moment where you get that.
It's a weird one when you know, it took me a few years to say I was like an artist or an actor. It took me a long time, to be perfectly honest. And one of the first times was saying it on the podcast, was because I am doing that. It's what I do. Do you know what I mean? You have an agent and you do all that thing, which seems the glamorous side of it. I think, oh, you've made it, you know what I mean? And reality, I don't think I've made it at all, do you know what I mean? And don't
get me wrong. But you get to that point where you're comfortably humble about it. I think that's the hard
part. Yeah, and I think you, especially like you in your, answering your question, it's, I have had younger actors kind of say it to me, or even people who I thought are on, you know, peers and people who are, you know, I said, oh, wow, what do you think about this and what do you think about that? And it's, yeah, it's obviously I just kind of give them a open and honest as I can be, do you know what I mean? And like I say, just try and pass on what I've learned in the industry.
Because the experience is more valuable.
That's
than
what it is. It is experience. I remember doing one shoot and a girl, bless her, it was only her first shoot, and she was like, kept getting her phone out and like taking selfies and stuff. And I was just like, I don't know if I said this on the podcast before, but I was just like, I felt compelled to say, like, just stop what you're doing for a second. Just be like, listen, we're at a professional shoot here. And one, it's not great kind of, you know, the way of social media now, snapping everything, you know, I was brought up, you know, and obviously still a lot of the jobs when you're signing NDAs and you can't talk about it. But also just to kind of make her realise, like, live in the moment, be present here, because, you know, whilst you're on your phone taking a selfie, you're missing a moment here. Or like when someone, like I've had the odd, like say the odd person asked me about this and that, and you know, what my advice is. And I think as well, because I didn't go to drama school, I think it's important to pass that on and encourage people to, you don't necessarily have to, you know, you have to, you know, do that. You don't have, you know, we all take different paths and we all learn different ways.
Yeah.
And if I can give encouragement, I always will, because it does, like I say, I do find it hilarious sometimes when I still get these jobs and, you know, you do things, you think, wow, I actually get paid to do this. Or you pinch yourself when you've done a job and you, like we were saying before, you're so busy trying to get the next job, you actually forget what you've been and done. And
That's why I found whenever I'm on shoots, I'll do a thing where, like, when I'm on shoots, I'll do some, like, behind the scenes of what other people are doing. Mm. Even on my work Instagram, like, there's, like, one out of, like, 20-odd pictures that's of me, and that was, like, because it was on a short film wrap photo, but everything else is of other shoots.
Yeah.
The only times there's stuff on my Instagram is when it's of shoots that are standouts, so I think Video Inc. is in two highlights for my Instagram, and that's the only times I come in some of the pictures, because it's ones that people have snapped as well as ones of my own, and it's like a highlight of the story of the entire day, and it shows the entire journey of that. But that's like my little memory of like a standout shoot.
Yeah.
So if I'm ever talking to someone, like, you know, oh, a good example of like this type of shoot or this type of shoot, I'm like, oh, actually, tell you what, there you go, watch this. This is the exact thing I'm on about, and it's a nice visual reference for that. Because I find a lot of people are worried about like proving that they're there doing the job rather than showing it by doing the job.
Yeah.
I understand that a lot of people need that whole behind the scenes, like, you know, like showcase and show others, like, in, from a comedy perspective, when you're trying to get clients and stuff like that, they like to see the behind the scenes stuff on that. So it's just kind of like more courteous to capture the company, what they're doing, and then be like, there you go, guys, there's some of my BTS if you want to put that on your stuff and all that lot. Because then you've just secured a nice little position with yourself and them, because like that person who they've brought on has gone out their way to capture their shoot and what they've done, not about, oh, I'm here with them.
What
they're doing, this is a cool thing that I'm a part of, not here because of.
Yes.
I think that's what a lot of people do.
No.
Realise.
Yeah, to be honest, it's funny you should say that, because the other week we were doing one with Adam, and I was obviously just taking behind the scenes. And again, it weren't for me. I was just thinking, oh, this is great for Video Inc. and for them. And I said to Adam, I was just like, no, next time I need to actually bring my proper camera and do behind the scenes for you. And he was like, yeah, but obviously, because it just been my own little world, you just think, oh, somebody else is doing that, or, you know, that's just the way, you know what I mean? You're so busy, you know, say acting or doing whatever, but then you realise, well, really, you know, there's times in the day where I am not doing anything. And again, I've learnt to kind of be present and not take pictures, but then you realise, oh, no, actually, it's a good reason to do that. So everyone has memories. And again, like, so especially someone like yourself, because, you know, while off weird having a picture done or something like that, you know, you're setting up for the next shot, or, you know, you're thinking two scenes ahead where you're like, right, I need to get that light and I need to rig that, or...
Yeah, that's the issue I had for, like, the most two recent shoots. So they did one that was in Snowdonia, and then they did one that was in the church, which is the one you were on. And they were two completely different type of days. The Snowdonia one was really chilled and relaxed one. And I actually had my camera on the day there to do some of the behind the scenes whilst we were doing other stuff. But for the church one, I mean, you were there, it was a very full on day. Yeah. So there was no opportunity for me to just like get a camera out and do something. So a lot of it was me working with Danielson on the lighting. And it got to the point where it was just such a long time doing the actual shoot itself. You don't get a chance to capture all that stuff. We had to standing as some of the cast for some of it, because we were like, you know, some of the crazy characters.
Well, that's
we
a, that's that an, another thing when you do, especially, you know, I think it happens on a lot of sets, but especially Video Inc. And I think it's a testament to them, you know, like you say, you go above and beyond, and that's why I've always loved that, because again, you know, for me, it's like, I think sometimes you put on a pedestal as an actor and it's like, oh, I can't do this. And again, we were talking all about this before. I wish I would have just pressed play, but again, we were just having a good old catch up. But it's made me think about it and definitely say on here, it's like, you know, speak to everyone on set, but also find out what they do and try and learn a little bit as well, because that's how I've learned how to do things, and that's making my own films now. It's like, that's 3 years of just mucking in and getting involved, and, you know, at the end of the day, we'd wrapped and finished, and it's like, you know, well, I can go home then, but I want to help de-rig and help everyone, because I want everyone else to go on time, you know what I mean? Because it was a long day, that, and again, we were shooting in this fantastic church, but again, you know, the lighting's all different. We were down in the crypt at one point, which was just nuts, like, absolutely, you know. Then you're asked to be in it and as an actor, and then you
get that weird moment where you're like a mixture of tired and exhausted. You kind of get this weird semi-high moment where just stupid shit just makes you laugh. You just get to that point where you're trying to push through it, but you're just slowly descending more into insanity throughout the night.
Yeah, I think there was a few times that happened where we're just like, you just become delirious, don't you? And again, it's one of those things, great bit of advice, you have a laugh or you're crying. At that point, you're just in tears, and like you say, the littlest thing will, you know, someone will crack a joke, and, you know, then everyone gets it, and then it's a running joke then, and it'll be a running joke for the next five times you're on set with people. And that, to me, that's when you realise how, you know, how fortunate we are to do what we do, because I think, like any job, you know, you can get caught up in it, but, you know, end of the day, what we're doing, we're being creative, and it should never not be fun, and they're always fun, those shoots. Don't get me wrong, a lot of the time you're knackered and, you know, really tired, and because again, you know, you're going above and beyond, and I say Adam's visions are just so nuts sometimes. You do think, like, practically, you know, any other kind of crew you'd think wouldn't be able to do this, whereas with our crew, it's just kind of, again, because everyone mucks in and gets involved,
you're
able to bring these you know, these ideas to life, and it's something that, you know, it's made me appreciate being on those sets more when I'm on other sets, and also when I'm on those sets to drive them a bit more, to say, like, listen, we can do this. It's just, you know, this is nothing compared to these other, you know, video in shoots I've done. Or in general, when you can see someone struggling a little bit and you just have to give them a little, you know, give them a hug, or just give them a little chat, or, like, that's how we were chatting the other day, weren't we? Because, again, we'd always say hello and stuff like that, but, again, you know, we're working, you know, we're doing a job, and that particular shoot in the church, I went upstairs because I wanted to see it, but then, obviously, me and you had a really good chat and a bit of a heart-to-heart, and it's really important to do that and remember that, and I think it's just in general to do that with people, because I don't think you should ever be too busy to just have a normal conversation. That, again, that's what happened today. We ended up chatting for like 2 hours and then thought, oh shit, we've got to do the podcast, you know what I mean? And like, but again, I'm so glad we did that, because it's, again, we were having a catch up, and you know what I mean? And again, it's so nice to do this when we're not on set, and I know I need to do this with Adam and Ollie. And all the gang, you know what I mean, like people like shout out to Rupert as well, who's a really cool guy, works at Video Inc. And again, find out, you know, get a bit of background, you know, about you guys, and, you know, all the other people that want to get on the podcast who've been kind enough agreed to do it. It's
because everyone's got a very interesting story.
It's mad, mate. You know what I mean?
I've never heard anyone whose story is the same as someone else's. Everyone's got a really obscure background that brings them into doing what they do.
Yeah,
and I find that quite interesting. I know you see like a lot of films, you have like a generic character gets introduced, you're like, okay, so that's our backstory. But the amount of times I've met people on set and the reason they do what they do is always different. And I don't understand how that's always something so unique and different, but yet, you know, in cinema we're always like down to the same, like, this is a person's backstory. But then you've got something that's like, oh, well, you know, they'll come from, you know, some traumatic event that will have happened, or something like, you know, a bit mental illness or something, or whether it comes down to a matter of a whole life change into doing what they do. It's quite interesting on how many people have got somewhat similar reasons, but complete different stories of how it happened or how it came about.
Definitely. And I think it's, For example, we were talking about John, weren't we? A mutual friend of ours who, again, we didn't know was a mutual friend. And again, this is what happens in this industry. It's a small world in general, but in this industry, it really is. Like, it's, you know, you tend to bump into people, and he's another one who's just, hopefully he'll be on the podcast at some point. He's another busy bee. But he was a solicitor, wasn't he?
He was a solicitor or a lawyer for a few years.
Do you know what I mean? And that's a pretty, you know, a tough career to do and to get to. And obviously he was a successful one and did really well. And then just one day he just had this urge, which I think that's what it is. I think it's the urge to be creative and to follow your passion.
Yeah.
And it's really brave. I just think it's really fascinating. And that's why I want to do speak to more people and, again, find out people's stories, because I think we just see a picture of someone and, like, say, oh, when they're doing really well. And you think, oh, well, they've just, you know, that's just because they've looked that way, or they're really lucky, or they've, you know. And it's like, well, no, they've worked really hard to get to there. And you don't, like you say, don't judge people just by looks or kind of, you know, you genuinely don't know what they've been through. And again, I think it's a positive thing, and we should implore people like that and give credit to them. And again, hopefully someone listen to this, you know, I've always said this, you know, I would love one day, the lovely people who do listen to this, you know, to come up to me and just be like, oh, listen to that podcast, mate, it was really nice. And again, every now and then I get messages like that, and that to me means more than, say, a like for a film that I did, or like a music video I did, or a shoot that I did, because this is my own kind of creative, you know, this is like my baby, this, do you know what I mean? And it's my own creative content that I'm really passionate about, do you know what I mean? And it's took me a long time to find my voice. I've wanted to do it for a long time, and it's something that, you know, I think people just see a picture of you, or, like, again, with you, you'll see something, you think, oh, he must be really, you know, confident because he works in films, but we were saying, like, it's not...
Quite a polar opposite.
Quite insular people and shy, and I noticed that with a lot of people in film, but when we get on set, we, you know, it's
a whole change. Yeah,
we're ourselves, aren't we? And we become these, you know, characters, or, like you say, you become the person who you really want to be. And
I found that I recently, just to date the podcast there, on the 31st of August, just gone. I went down to London for an event called Global 12, which is like a gathering of a couple, like, you know, R&B and grime artists on the top, because I had done a music video for the artist that had tickets, he had a plus one ticket in, so I went down there with him or whatever. And I was supposed to be, we were half and halving it. I was doing like coverage there to just kind of like network and whatnot, but I was also filming some stuff for his next music video there. So then it saves me work, because I'm just generally filming me networking, and that's his music video, which is
perfect, isn't it?
Ideal for that one. But I found when we arrived there, I felt quite out of place. Because it's quite the R&B scene as well, so it's quite a majority of it was a lot of international rappers and everything, and it's quite I'd say about an 80 to 20 for races and colour. So I felt very like stand out and awkward. It's like that really interesting time where it's like, you know, you're not exactly sure if you really belong in that type of scene thing.
Well, it's funny how you're the minority then, aren't you?
It was a weird one with that. Not as an uncomfort, but that thing where it's like, oh, I don't know if I'm expected to be here type of thing. But but it's just one of those like weird paranoia things. And then once we had like about half an hour to settle into the area and, like, you know, see a general vibe, what's going on. And then there was like that moment where I was clicked. I was like, right, okay, I've got to film some stuff then. And then the moment I started filming, it was a completely different characteristic change. So it was a lot more...
You're comfortable than that.
Yeah, you've
got your armour off.
You're a lot more in everyone's eye line. You're going up to people filming stuff. And the amount of times I filmed someone and they went, I've just filmed some stuff for you. Do you have an Instagram? I'll follow you. I can send it to you later on. Like, yeah. And I think I had like 24 odd people that I've just got screenshots of. Like, I've got to send someone that. I've got to send someone that. And I went, and I'm dreading sorting that out, good God. But but you meet 101 different people, and you get to hear a lot of other people's stories and all this stuff, and a lot of people struggle with that interaction, but when you're working, it's just second nature to be like, interact with that person, film this, and you take yourself out of the equation. And the moment you stop and you pack that away, you're back to like your natural personality. It's really weird. You have this like second skin of confidence when it's work mode. And then when it's you, you're like, oh, that thing that makes... Because I feel like filmmaking is what defines me.
Yeah.
It's what defines my character, the way, the style, the way I hold myself on set. It's completely different from the way I am out and about with people. I mean, give or take a few drinks, I'll come back to that. But a lot of the time, I'm quite reserved and in myself. And I don't go out my way to interact with people. But you put a camera in my hands, I'll happily bowl up to anyone, go, can I do this, that, and the other, and interact with them. It's a really obscure thing. It's almost like you've given yourself your own excuse to interact with people when you shouldn't really need to have that excuse. You should be able to just talk to people.
Yeah.
But until you're in that mindset, it's like, oh no, I don't really want to bother them on their day. I wouldn't want to be bothered on my day. I'm not going to bother them on their day. And then the moment you're like, well, I'm in work mode now. Hey, can I just do it? And you just talk to anyone.
It isn't it? I think a lot of it, I think it's ego, isn't it? And almost kind of, the way, you know, society is, you know, the way we think and feel and stuff like that. And then, like you say, it's that armour you have up when you know. It's the same with me, where I'm not the most confident person in the world, but when I'm on set, I have this ability where it's like, right, it's go time now. And I'm this character, and I turn into this character. And it's the same when someone takes my photo. I hate having my photo taken, I really do. I'm not a fan of it at all. But at the end of the day, like, I'm a professional now, and this is what I do, and I can turn it on. It's like a light switch now. But it took me a long time to get to that. And it's funny, I was watching a BBC 4 documentary a couple of weeks ago, which again is funny, and I'm sure Ben will admit to this as well. When you're actually working film, you don't actually watch many films because you're so busy trying to do stuff. And like I say, especially now I'm trying to edit stuff.
Yeah.
So when I do get a brief moment to watch something, like I say, I don't have a telly or anything, so it's which doesn't help. But it's but no, it's like, it's one of those things like where you have to separate from it. But now I had I think it was like Saturday night, I made myself some food, and then I was kind of thought, oh right, and then someone kind of come across it, because I was house sitting. So I was flicking through and I thought, all right, BBC 4, that'll do me. And there was this documentary about Prince, and it was just, I love his music, do you know what I mean? Huge character. And basically it was how his first televised interview. It was horrendous, man. It was so bad. Like, don't get me wrong, his music was amazing, but as soon as he got interviewed, he realised, he was like, oh no, it's me now, I'm not Prince anymore, I'm this person. And he basically, you know, he said to himself that will never happen again, and what I've got to do is I've got to got to create this character. And very much so. And he was I think it was his bass player who said it, he said then after that night, next time they're in rehearsals, he was like, right, we're all going to have characters, and he's going to be this, you know, sexy, sassy guy who's just, you know, who we all know is Prince, and that's who he was in the end. This one guy's going to be this, I think the bass player is going to be this, you know, samurai Japanese warrior who's just cool as fuck, which I remember in the 99 video. If you go through, that's the best way you'll see that video, and you'll see each character. And it just fascinated me, because you just think, and again, I think that's, we were saying it before, it's all creatives, and I think everyone in general, but especially creative people, it's like, we have that barrier, don't we? We have this wall, and then we've got to chip away at it.
I think it's because we work in such an interesting industry, us as an individual is boring. We think we're really, really boring. But when we're in the industry, we're really, really interesting, because we're all very different. We've all got our own little skills and quirks and experience to bring to the table. And it's like, so when you're on set, you're like, oh, I know this, that, and the other. Does that help? And then someone goes, that's excellent, because I know this, that, and the other. And it's like you've all got your own little jigsaw pieces. And somehow, somewhere, you all put your shit in the middle, and it makes a picture for the overall project.
Yeah, whereas that's a great way of putting it.
As an individual, though, you're like, oh, no, I think I'm quite boring. And people talk to you, and you're like, actually, no, you're dead interesting. You're like, you're dead interesting, but you don't really see yourself as that, because you know the funniest thing you do is what you do for work. That's the cool stuff.
Yeah.
You as an individual, you're just like, I'm just a normal person, really. Yeah.
That's the way I think that's the way I've been brought up, you know. And I think it's like, say, that humble thing where, you know, you don't think you're better than anyone, you don't think you know, you treat everyone the same, and I've always thought that. But I remember my mate Jake, he said it to me, because he kind of gave me a big push a few years ago. We'd met, I think I've said it on the podcast before, I repeat myself a lot on the podcast, you know, to be honest. But again, it's because it's trying to get this, you know, my story across and the point across, where it is, it's, you know, he was saying, he's like, why don't you do behind the scenes stuff of the, you know, the things you do? And obviously a lot of the time, like, well, I can't because of NDAs. And but then actually thinking about it, he was like, no, I'm being a bit lazy here. But also in just, I did think at the time, and my perspective has totally changed now. It's like, why would anyone care about what I do? Do you know what I mean? Like, genuinely. And he was like, mate, you do some of the coolest things in the world. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you meet so many cool people. And it just, until he kind of gave me that encouragement and that confidence to think, yeah, actually, yeah, I should be doing this. And again, it, for me, it was more just think, I should be doing this for the next generation coming through, or someone like me who didn't, had a different kind of way into the industry, just to make them realise, like, oh, we're all the same, really, and this is how you do it. And again, it only happens by going back to that point of, by doing, really, and like you say, just capturing it. And again, I think in my head, it was more my ego, where I was a bit like, I don't want to feel like I'm showing off, or I'm like, but in reality, it's like, it's not that. This is, you know, I'm proud of what I do, do you know what I mean? And I've realised now, every time I'm on set now, I do kind of capture things, and, you know, I'm trying to take my camera a lot more now. Yeah, just to document it. I think that's the big thing.
My honours was built around that, because I did an entire piece that was about the work of doing assistant directing. So I had to jimmy-rig this, because I found the criteria was, it was I had to kind of record stuff on set and talk about it whilst on set. But the problem I found with that is it's very hard to actually find a moment when you're free to talk to a camera about what you're doing on set when they don't need you. It's fine time, because the moment you've got that time, you're resting, because you're like, I need this energy for the next time they go back, right, we need these lights all the way over there then. So I had to jimmy-rig this kind of like Predator cam set up with like a little shoulder mount with like a little action camera there, and just narrate over it, because I remember all the experiences from it. But to get that first person perspective is completely different, because you don't realise how much you run around like a chicken when it comes down to doing a shoot, until you watch back footage. You're like, what the fuck am I doing? You realise that you're doing 101 things, but at that time you're like, yeah, this is controlled chaos in my head.
Yeah, that's what it is.
On a video,
isn't it?
You're like, as you can see here, I'm doing, and even narrating it, I couldn't keep up with what I was doing. And that's what's fascinating. A lot of people don't realise that there's a lot of hard work that needs to go into doing a job, even if it's the smallest thing as a runner. If you know how to do your job right as a runner, it's not just, do you want a coffee, mate? It's small things. Like, if you've got a camera team and you've got, like, you know, your main DOP and a camera assistant, and the DOP has got the camera and the camera assistant's got the tripod, who the fuck's going to take the box of lenses? Who's going to take potentially the Apple box or the things they're leaning on, or like the cabling or the monitor? Shit like that. So there's always opportunities for everyone to excel at their job and take it that above and beyond. But you don't realise it unless it's pointed out to you. And that's what I built my honours around, was like, you know, as an assistant director, it's not just telling people we're behind on time, it's helping the overall thing by either cutting corners or finding ways to accomplish stuff quicker.
Yeah.
So like jumping in and helping with kit, or going like, right, well, this is a problem and this is a problem, could we combine this and then make it one problem and then deal with it this way? And they're like, yeah, we can do that. And going through that. And I found it really hard to documentate stuff on set. Because you love everything you do, and it's super fun when you're there filming it, and you're like, oh, this will look amazing. You never really get the chance to remind yourself, oh, we should film this. That's why a lot of shoots I've seen have someone's job that's dedicated just doing behind the scenes.
Well, to be honest, that's why something where, eventually I want to get to a point where that's all I do, you know what I mean? Because I find it, like, say, I find it fascinating as a, you know, a document, style of shooting. But also, I remember doing a shoot for Eaten by Lions. It was a great film by Jason Wingard. Lovely guy, hopefully he's going to come on.
Was that the one that had Vegas in it? Johnny Vegas?
Yeah. Fantastic. I basically did like one day on it because we were filming around the corner, and one of my friends was, again, just bumped, basically, again, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Can you do this? Of course I will. Didn't make it into the cut. Doesn't matter. It was a great, great experience, and I got to meet a load of cool people. And I remember chatting to the guy, that was his sole job behind the scenes, and I noticed him because, again, I always make that point of, you know, chatting to everyone on set and stuff, but I noticed he had this really strange rig, and I was like, God, that's cool, like, and he was like, mate, I made it myself, mate, you know what I mean, DIY job, and I was just like, well, that's cool as hell, mate, that's so
you're
cool.
You're always tinkering, you're and always
yeah,
making DIY
just,
rig.
And I just thought, what a cool job that is to just do the behind the scenes, and it made me a hell of a lot more... just empathetic to when you're making a film, you know, to kind of have all those bases covered.
Everyone's department has so much effort put into
it. Yeah, man, and it's just like, it's And again, like that thing where if it means me having a spare 5 minutes, whip my camera out on, especially the phone, the cameras on phones now are just as, good, if not, some of them are, depends how good your phone is, to be fair, but, just a quick minute, like say a minute interview to yourself, or, capturing you guys, setting up, or, Adam and Ollie having a little meeting, or them chatting to, you can't, unfortunately, because of budgets and all sorts of stuff, you can't, on big sets you do have that, and that's great doing it on the big sets, but a lot of the time, and especially if you're starting out, you're not going to have that. You're lucky if you have two cameras, never mind three. So I always kind of like make a point of that now, documenting when I'm on set, just to remember it when I'm flicking through, because it's so easy just to forget about them. And again, like I say, I think it's really important to document it anyway, because again, you just learn from it. You just think.
Have you found like a lot of the pictures that are on either your Facebook or Instagram, like either profile pictures or like cover photos, are all from shoots? Have you gone to that point yet?
Yeah. Do you know what? I think I've made a more point recently to not do that, and also to push other people's work as well. I think that's important. Like I did funny enough, my last post was about that film, that documentary last night called Free Solo, which I highly recommend. Definitely watch it, because it's inspired me as a human, but also as a making a documentary at the moment. It's just like, it's fascinating. I think it's got to a point where I'd just be doing like behind the scenes, or a lot of the time I'd use like a crappy picture that I've took on a shit phone, and then I think, hang on a minute, I've got like tons of images here from that day that are amazing, that have been edited or whatever. But again, I think I'm very conscious as well to be real and not, don't get me wrong, some pictures I put up, like obviously that's the finished article and they've been edited and whatever, just because that's the poster, or that a great still from that day and I captured a perfect moment. But also just to kind of be a bit more real with people and people who follow me, and I say especially the next generation, to be like, listen, it's not all
champagne and roses.
Yeah, it really isn't.
I had that, because I for the longest time I had a profile picture that I had to purposely take, because it was a while back. This is when I was doing my short film, which again I've not sat down and edited. Good God, I will eventually. But when I was doing that one, because that was with John Stewart as well, funny enough.
Nice.
He'd said to me that I should get myself an updated profile picture, because he wanted to put it in a post to kind of like big up the piece. Like, this is what the project is, this is who the director is. And he said, do you have a profile picture that's kind of like suits the style of the film? Because it was like a horror genre, right? It was like, do you have anything that suits that? And I spent like an hour framing this entire, because I was going to take just a standard picture. But I was like, no, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go all out. And I got lights out and colouring and... I think I remember there's a shot, it's got this really nice, semi-spotty background, and like this orange and this purple coming in. And I remember that I did it by shining a light through a colander, because it got all these lights spotted.
Yeah.
And I sat and I was like, I spent an hour of my time posing for a picture just to make this project look really shit hot.
Yeah.
And I sat and I was like, I think I came to realise, I was like, that's the last time I ever doing something like that. Because as much as I enjoyed it, I was like, that's something I would have enjoyed more if it was for someone else.
Yeah.
So I made it an adamant thing that if I'm ever changing my profile pictures or cover photos, it has to be something someone else has taken of me, or behind the scenes of the general day.
Yeah.
That's why I think my current one was from a shoot I did with a guy called Fraser Oxley, called Powerless, which is this boxing film. It was a really, really nice shoot, actually. It went on for like 3 to 4 days, about a young girl struggling with the death of her brother, and her using boxing as that vent for
that tool. Yeah, and it really is, man.
And the behind the scenes guy they had on the day has got this ridiculous photo. I have like hundreds of photos. He got this ridiculous one of me where I had all the kit on and two umbrellas literally roped to me because the weather was so temperamental. I looked at some really dodgy samurai looking like motherfucker, and I was like, that's great, that's going to be the profile picture. But mainly for the fact that I've never had a photo of me actually doing the job, because everyone else is very busy getting the actors or the main director and yeah. the piece itself, but there's very little of the crews or the second actors, you know, the ones that are just like cameos or there for like one or two shots and then they're like done for a day. There's not a lot of shoots where they get the moment to be like, yeah, that's a nice little thing, a nice little memento.
Yeah,
not
very
as a
much
thing
so.
To like show off, more something to be like, that's a nice little thing that I can put as like a bit of a, especially for CVs. Because I find when it comes down to it, I feel like having an Instagram of CV work, like this is a shoot that I was on, or you know, this is a nice little snippet from a collage of stuff from that day, is a nice little way of showing you're doing, you know, you know what you're doing at your job.
Yeah.
But it's just getting stuff like that. It's so difficult to do, and you don't want to be the person there taking a selfie of yourself to be like, oh, I'm doing my job. Because no one wants to do
I think that's why for me, like, it's in, you know, it's great and I'm definitely going to do it more, because it's, you're capturing people in the natural element, and it's real, and it's like, say, it's not fake, it's not, you know, staged. It's like, that's what, and that's why I say that picture is probably perfect of you, because it's like, that's what it's like. It's, you know, you're carrying 101 things, you're trying to do 201 things, and that's the reality. Do you know what I mean? It's not, and it's the same with, again, when you're doing, you know, it's all well and good, you know, getting that final image of what I do, but you forget of all the, you know, the hard work that's gone into it, whether it's, you know, the getting the costume right, or the getting styled, or the makeup and hair, and then, you know, basically working up to that, you know, to that point where you know, the perfect moment. It's that's very rare. It doesn't, you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, I'm fortunate because I get people to do that for me, but it's not the full story, and I think it's important to capture the full story. And also,
there's so much of a shoot that a picture doesn't tell.
Yeah,
even
man.
From a crew rat photo, I find those fascinating.
Yeah.
A lot of times you see people like, "Oh, it's such a good shoot," and you're like, "But I know so much about that shoot that was and wasn't."
Yeah.
And there's 101 either things that were issues or dramas, and every shoot has its drama. I found, even some very very minor than others, but every shoot has its little nitpicks, and I find it quite fascinating, because everyone's got their own little perspective and story, and everyone knows where they were when A or B or C incident happened, and it's quite interesting with that. People only see like the aftermath.
Yeah.
They only see like the after product, like, oh, that's a really nice looking film, or oh, that's a really nice looking crew photo, and they're like, oh, that's a nice shot, and you're like, yeah, but you don't realise the 3 hours went into that one shot, and how pissed off everyone was, and how tired we were, and how grumpy everyone was, and everyone was like, arsehole, you know, like, you don't realise that, but at the end of it, you're like, yeah, that was great, you know, that was nice, and we all went out drinking, we were all friends then, but
at
that point, you want to rip each other apart,
because
that weird family vibe.
Do you know what, I think that's the best way, the analogies you've used, the family, and the jigsaw, because you're all different shapes and sizes, and you fit in different positions. And the family thing is, like, you know, you can be cat and dog with people. I remember I've never really had a go at Adam or anything, because of just, again, he's just a cool dude. But I remember we did that job in Iceland, and I was knackered. Like, it was the end of the year, I'd not slept a wink in like 4 days. It was freezing cold, bro.
Oh,
I'm talking, you know, we're
standing,
we're in the bloody
Iceland,
North Sea, do you know what I mean? Whatever, the Atlantic Ocean, whatever it is. Excuse my geography, but, and I was sat in the back of this big Land Rover, and it was great, but obviously, like, I'm 6'2", mate, do you know what I mean? I'm right in the back, and I'm squashed up, and I've been sat in this, you know, for about 4 hours on the way home, and we've been in and out, and I was just tired, mate. I'd not had a coffee all day, because again, we had to get these shots. And I remember I just had a, and I'm never really, I don't really have diva moments, but I had a diva moment, and I just slammed the door, and I just went, I'm not going in the fucking back again. And I remember I seen Adam's face, and he was like, God, it was like I shouted at a little child, mate. And I remember I went in and just had, I literally just for 30 minutes just went on my own, because obviously you've been with that crew for, you know, 3 days straight, living with each other. And that's when the only way I could put it, the analogy is probably the same of like when bands tour, and I've had a few little experiences like that when you're just in each other's pockets like a family on holiday, and you're just like, you want to bloody throttle them sometimes, but I never forget that. And I remember we laughed about it, you know, a couple of days later, the next job we did the year after. And to be honest, Adam was just like, oh mate, I won't have been bothered, I don't even. But I remember I felt so bad, because I was just like, I've seen my arse there, do you know what I mean? But again, that's what happens, you know what I mean? You can't all be happy-go-lucky all the time, and I'm quite a positive person, to be honest, so it was probably a
shock to everyone.
Yeah, I think it was. I think Michelle was like, oh my god. But again, it's like, that's the reality, man, that's the real. And when you that doesn't mean it gives you the right to shout at people or whatever, and I'd never condone that. But also, I think it's important to remember to, you've got to have that release. And I think that's what I'd found. I wasn't, you know, I'd not, you know, not done any exercise for a couple of days, which, you know, I'd not ate, which are two big things for me. If I don't eat and I don't exercise, I'm a very grumpy person. But again, it was just hilarious, and thinking back to it, and like I say, you see these amazing images of me, you know, on that beach that's the same as Game of Thrones, or when you stood outside this waterfall, and you know, everyone's like, "Oh my God, it's amazing!" Look at that job and think,
"I know that exact shoot you're referring to."
I just thought, you know, I look at that job and think, "Fucking hell, I didn't sleep for 4 days there." You know what I mean? And I was knackered and I was ill, and it was. But again, they're the jobs that you remember, which is funny. Do you know what I mean? And it was brilliant.
I think I've only had one. Shoot where I went off on one like that, but I think it's just because like the director on it was very dictator-like, and just he didn't really see people as people and just saw them as like just rock jobs to be filled.
Yeah,
and
that's not cool, man. It doesn't matter what job you're doing, but it can happen with directors.
Because it was during the Beast of the East when like all the -20 degrees weather was over it, and we were filming in that with an actress that was wearing fuck all. So it was. I mean, to be fair, the shoot was a wreck to begin with, because there's no shoot script, there's no shot list, there was no storyboard. God. It was all ad lib with non actors and one professional actress, and she was wearing like a skimpy little dress. I had to argue to have this fur scarf on her character, and it was such a shit show because I was ADing on that, and that was actually I think that's actually a part of my honours as well. That video. I'm very delicate about what I mentioned about that one, because that was for, it was someone from a company that's quite a renowned company, let's say that.
Yeah.
I don't want to get sued. I'll say it's an American company at least. Yeah. But we were filming on that, and they'd shown up an hour late, and the crew were supposed to have expenses paid, and people were supposed to be given food and water and all this shit, and they were given nothing, nothing at all. And I paid out my own pocket to give everyone coffees, because. Everyone was getting just angry as shit very quickly, because nothing was going on. I had no answers for anyone. I couldn't even get in touch with the director. Mm. And the producer showed up with the actress. He was like, "Oh, well, you should have had a word with me before paying for everyone's coffees." I was like, "Right." And I pointed her at all the team. I was like, "You tell them that." And she looked and she was like, "Well, yeah, okay, next time then. Yeah, yeah." Because everyone was at that point where they were trying to just like ignore the fact that it was freezing as shit, and everyone had like 4 layers on, and everyone was still cold. And then for the guy to rock up, and he's like, "Right, is everything set up?" And we're like, "Nothing set up. There's no shot. There's no storyboard. There's nothing. That we don't know what we're doing." And he's like, "Oh, well, we're just gonna be filming." And he was a very awkward director. He was very adamant about things being done his way. So because he was filming everything on like a 200mm, the actress was like 4 streets down the road, and he couldn't understand why the radio mics couldn't pick her up. And they were like, "Well, there's no way we're going to pick that up. She's too far away. But we could get closer, and then that'd be fine." And then he was like, "Well, no, I don't have to sync it up in the edit." And they were like, "Right," because he wanted everything going into the camera. And we were like, "That's just awkward as shit." So he was like, "Right, well, we'll ADR it. Can't. There's no script." And they're like, "We'll bungee cord a couple of these cables together so we can just get closer, but it's still synced up." It was like, no, she's going to need a professional. So he kicked off 3 people that were doing it for free and paid someone to come on and do the job for the next day. And it was supposed to be like these 14 days of this, morning, night, morning, night, morning, night, morning, night.
Wow.
Got 2 days in and it got cancelled.
Yeah.
And they went back for more funding. But that was the only time I went off at a director, because he was so panicky about everything, to the point that, you know, we had radios and I was trying to give commands to everyone, like, "Oh, can I have this light in here and this light in here?" He was like, "Oh, can we have radio silence?" I'm like, "Well, no, you told me to set up the scene. Let me do my job." And I'll be doing it, and then he'll be like trying to instruct something. I'm like, and he's like all the way down the street. I'm like, I can't hear you, mate. Use your walkie talkie. And then the other director's like, "Oh, yeah, he was just saying I'll be ready for a shot." I was like, "Yeah, why didn't you walk it in?" He's like, "Oh, he turned off the walkie." I was like, "What? Why?" It's just like that all throughout the day. I think the breaking point was the actress had hypothermia, or was borderline to that, because she was in a hot bath and was still shaking. It was that bad at the end of the day. And I said to him, like, "We can't do that tomorrow. We can't do that." And he was like, "Oh, it's all right though. She's professional. She'll be used to it." And I sat and I was like, "No, we're fucking not doing that tomorrow, mate.
Mm.
Or I'm not on this shoot, and this person won't be, and this person won't be. Because the only reason they're here is because I'm here. And I guarantee if they go, everyone's gone.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Mm.
Next day rolled around. He was like, no, shoot's been cancelled completely. And I think she was pursuing legal action against them because of it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, fuck. It's the
fair
only
play
time.
To him, man. And a fair play to use. And I think it's a big issue. And I think, that, again, I can, you know, condone you for saying that, mate, because I've let a lot of stuff go over the years because, you know, you don't want to upset people, and again you want to, you know, you're trying to support someone's vision, aren't you? But then I think sometimes people get it in their head and, like, say they have this warped sense of, like, they lose perspective and it's like forget about values and morals and, like, just common sense and, like, human decency. And it's like, I say again, it's happened to me numerous times and you just get on with it. But then fortunately I think it's probably just the way I've been brought up. If I think something's wrong, I'll just say it. Do you know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, there's a couple of times where I bit my lip, but now more than ever, I just don't, and I call it and I say how it is. Because again, it's just that thing of, you know, everyone's thinking it, but no one's brave enough to say it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you've got to be that person. Do you know what I mean? And step up. And
that was my first experience as well, doing assistant directing work. So that was, to say deep end would be an underestimation of that. But I think that really set a standard for me when it came down to what to expect of people. Because I was like, to see an actress who put her effort in, wonderfully, she's a wonderful actress, but to see someone like that physically shaking and being given minimal to no treatment or to be looked after properly, you know, like, they wouldn't even let her sit in the vehicle with the heater on because they didn't have enough, like, money in the budget for fuel for the car to keep the heater on. I was like, you're taking the piss. Let's get her to a cafe then. It's like, oh, we need her on set. I was like, I just stared at him. I was like, are you seriously telling me that you value your production over her health?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
that was a real eye opener for me, because that was when the job gets so corporate and industry that it takes the piss and it doesn't look at the little guy on the matter or the little woman in that situation. And I was just like, that's ridiculous. You can't sit there and tell me that that's right.
I'll tell you a good one, actually. And that's when this job happened, and then that's when I realised, like, you know what, it doesn't matter who it's for, you can't pay me enough money. And again, we don't want to say too much because we don't want to get sued and stuff and all that. But it was for a very, very big, very big brand, huge brand, who, again, I've worked with before and afterwards. But again, a lot of the time, it's the production team. It's not necessarily the brand. It's the production teams you're working with. And we'd done all day. We were doing green screen and, you know, we're inside and it's great. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, later on, they were like, oh, Jack, we're going to need you for the night shoot. So obviously in my head straight away, well, I'm thinking, boom, more money, happy days. And obviously I'm committed to the course, so it's like, yeah, man, no worries. We ended up driving to the Reebok Stadium, Bolton Stadium, I don't know what it's called now. So obviously miles away, I don't drive, so I've, you know, thinking, all right, well, hopefully I'm going to get a lift back here. You presume you are, because it's a big production or stuff like that. And basically, I had to wear this samurai outfit. And it was amazing, because it was like a legit samurai. It had been flown over. They had this traditional, you know, full get up, and it was this lovely old gentleman who couldn't speak a word of the Queen's. He was like, he had to put it on me because he knew the exact way. It was, you know, you just think, I don't want to move in this because I'm scared of breaking it.
Yeah.
And it was super cool and it was amazing.
Was it heavy?
Oh God, it was really heavy. You know, you just think, like, God, how the hell did they fight in this back in the day? Like, you just think, wow. But again, I think you get caught up in this element of, like, oh, I'm in the business, and you know, I'm living the dream and all this stuff. And it was like middle of bloody November, December. You know what I mean? It's freezing cold. It's like -4, -5.
Especially in, like, was it like a metal armor?
Yeah. And obviously, I've got all my stuff underneath. But then it was like, oh, you can't wear that stuff underneath in case it shows on film.
Really?
The filming on the other side of the pitch. You know, when you're just like, you know, when yourself is like, you are not going to see this,
yeah,
and it's probably not going to even make it in the edit. But you're a professional and you get on with it and you carry on. And I remember they were like, in the day we had food and stuff, but then at the night they were very kind of like, you know,
dismissive.
Yeah, and a bit kind of just like, you know, there was no teas and coffees, and, you know, no one kind of offered me a coffee. Like, they were getting everyone else, all the clients, and obviously they paid a lot of money,
really?
These guys, getting everyone coffees and stuff. Remember, we got to a point where, and I will say his name because he's an absolute legend. Big shout out to Mike Hogan, who hopefully I'll get on. He's a lovely, lovely guy. He basically was like, hang on a minute, can we get Jack a coffee here? Because it's fucking freezing and he's in a bloody metal thing. Do you know what I mean? And it's snowing and he's just stood in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
His foot on a ball with a samurai sword. Do you know what I mean? It was just fucking ridiculous. It'd gone way over. Do you know what I mean? It was just, it was stupid. But obviously, again, you've got all these important clients here. Again, stay professional, all good. And basically, like, right, don't worry, we're going to go to Subway and get you, you know, get some soups and sandwiches. And everyone's buzzing by this point because we're knackered. And I'm chatting to the makeup artist. She's freezing, and, you know, she's in a bloody like massive coat and winter warmers the lot. And I could tell her, she kept giving me those. They're amazing. And these like plastic things that you break and, you know, heaters.
Oh,
and she kept sneaking them in my hand, you know, because. And this, we had this director who was adamant, like, you can't have anything like that. You know, just like on one. You just think, mate, like, I'm over this now.
In the big picture, you're not going to see it.
You're not going to, but also, like, you don't care about me in the slightest. Do you know what I mean? All you're bothered is about getting these shots and impressing these clients. And I remember Mike come over to me and was just like, mate, do you know what I mean? Like, don't worry, man, we're nearly done. And like every shoot that ever happens in the history, it always runs over.
Yeah, yeah. See, whenever someone says we're nearly done, you're not.
We're gonna finish at 11. Mate, I was on set by 7 in the morning. Do you know what I mean? And obviously, I got up at like 5:30 to get there. They say my bike's in the middle of bloody nowhere. Do you know what I mean? And I remember that was one of those moments where I thought, is it worth? Do you know what I mean? Is it worth it? And I thought, no. Well, I'm here, so I've got to just get on with it. And you know, we've been taught to, you know, you do a job, you do it. And I remember, like, everyone had, you know, because everyone's freezing, like, everyone's freezing. Right, stop there, I got to the food, and all the sandwiches had been eaten, and they give me a cold soup.
Really?
And I was just, I did say something, I was just like, this is cold, man. And someone just thought, oh, well, it wasn't before. And I was just a bit like,
really?
Yeah. Right, do you know when you, I had that was when I had this burnage, you know, scally lad that's inside of me. I was like, mate, I'm going to offer this guy out and knock him out. And I just was like, I'm fucking over this, mate. I don't give a fuck who it's for.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm so glad I didn't, because I probably never worked a day in my life. I'd probably be in prison now. But it was just, I really had to bite my lip, man, because I just thought, you wouldn't dream of speaking to me like that if we're in the middle of nowhere and all these clients weren't here. And then fortunately, it was only because one of the clients, because I think a lot of them didn't speak English, to be fair. Luckily, one of them took a shine to me, because again, I'd spoke to him in the day and had a chat with him and was really interested in, you know, what he was doing. And, you know, was he enjoying Manchester? Basically saying about places in Manchester to go, because he was here for a couple of days. So it was like, oh, go to the Manchester Art Gallery, or, you know, go here, or go to the Northern Quarter and check this cafe out or whatever. And it got to the point where we ended up with wrapping, we finished. And then everyone's like getting, you know, sent off in these amazing, like, because this is what happens again a lot of the times on these big shoots and sets. You know, you have your private drivers and all stuff, and you get, you know, these beautiful Mercedes, big, you know, vans and whatever. And they were basically like, right, all the clients, put them in that one, and then we'll deal with all the cast and crew later. And it was only because he was like, no, Jack's freezing, like, he's coming in with us. And they basically offered to be, they were all staying at the Lowry, they basically like, mate, we'll get you a room and come for dinner with us tonight. And basically, I got to a point where I just had to, I was like, I'm done here. But yeah, I'll never forget Mike, because he was driving and he was, you know, like sitting in the front with me, mate, and put the heaters on. And that's, it was the...
The small mercies.
It showed the dark and the light, the best and the bad bits of the industry, all in that day. And like I say, people like Mike, so when every time I see him now, we've got a proper bond and I love working with him. He's a top guy. But also it showed that ruthless side of, you know, you get these people who just don't, you know. And again, it is the corporate side, and it stopped me doing a lot of that now. But again, at the time, like we were saying before, you know, it's very difficult to say no. You don't want to say no, because...
You just want work.
Yeah, and especially when it's for big brands and big clients and, you know, you think it's amazing. And don't get me wrong, there are amazing opportunities, and I've been very fortunate over the years to work with these big brands and... Mm. Again, you know, funny enough, they've just asked me to do a job or to help cast it today, actually, which, you know, is amazing, really. It's like really, really cool. But again, that's probably because they know Jack's a real one. And it'll be the same with you, where it'll be like, no, he's real, because he's all for the cause and wants to make the best, you know, best film or shoot possible. But you're not going to change your morals, and you're going to make sure everyone's okay. And
yeah.
I think that's basically what I'm trying to get across when I'm doing this, and encourage people, if they have, you know, been treated badly, do you know what I mean? don't be disheartened about it, because there's a lot of great people in this industry. Again, it's very rare it's ever happened, but there are, unfortunately, there's still people in the industry and big corporations, big brands that they just treat you like nothing. And
are you part of a union?
No, I'm not. Well, I'm with Spotlight now, so obviously that's, you know, but I've never had equity or anything like that.
Yeah, because I know a lot, I've worked with quite a few actors that have gone for equity. So it's like recently I got signed up to Bechtu because I had a, quite recent actually, we did a piece for the Manchester Museum and we had all kinds of hassle with the director for it who, to put it lightly, was an absolute arsehole to like both me as well as the actress, the producer, and just everyone on set. He was he was quite narcissistic. I'm pretty sure that's the wrong pronunciation, but I'm rolling with it. But he was very much like that, and he refused to pay any of us. He'd promised a profit share from the ticket sales, which was easily about over a grand's worth, which now wasn't the case and everything. And if it weren't for like one of the girls being on equity, we wouldn't have got this settlement. Allegedly, we will. I'll let you know if it happens on Friday. But we should have been paid about 300 each, roughly, from that shoot, and hadn't had a single penny from it, even though we'd done the job for it. But yeah, I never saw the value in having like a union or representation of what you do in your work until something like that.
Yeah.
And it makes me think back to that shoot I was on, and like, probably similar thing with you when you sit there, like having that third party that can mediate for you.
Yeah.
Because the luxury is of stuff like that is people don't realize it's set up there to keep that protection for you.
Yeah.
They'll just step in if they're like, no, you're taking the piss here with this. Yeah. Sort it out, or it's just going to be a big fucking problem. And it's not necessarily like, I don't think it's something that should be frowned upon for actors, because worst case scenario, even if that production company goes, oh well, you know, we work with this actor and he got equity involved for this, not on the other, it's like, if equity has to get involved in a matter, it's not going to be because of bollocks. It's going to be for valid reasons.
Yeah, no, to be honest, I think that's another thing that we were saying before about being professional and stuff. And obviously I am a professional now, but again, I've come a different way. So I've not been taught this. I've not been taught about equity. You know, back in the day, you used to get an equity card, and that's what you couldn't be a professional actor until you had one. Whereas now it's like with Spotlight, it's, you know, you have to have professional credits to get it. Obviously, having a professional agent, which obviously I do, but it's something that, again, I'm going to speak to my agent about it. Guy, big shout out to WGM Atlantic Talent, which it's changed his name to, and all the guys and girls out of there, because again, he's a brilliant guy and he's someone who I'd really want to pick his brain about. And I did look at one point, but again, it was one of those things where, you know, it costs money, and it's again, it's like not earning a lot of money, do you know what I mean? And again, probably now I definitely will do that, and obviously after this conversation I definitely will, because I remember it's happened a couple of times with me where I remember doing another one for the exact same brand, but again, different production company. And they were like, oh, we're just going to do this extra. If you just sign here. And basically, it was so, if the advert went internationally, they didn't have to pay me. You know, do you know what I mean?
Really?
So it's like, finger right. And you know, you're just like, well, one, I've got common sense. And two, I know that's right. You know, I've been in the game long enough. But this is unfortunately, this is what certain people do to cut costs and save money. And you just think, well, you're taking that money. And you're taking it out of my pocket when I'm doing the work and I'm working hard and I'm just as part of it as you, but because you think I'm a bit blue-eyed and a bit, you know,
simple,
or, and the people have done, especially a lot of, I find it happens with me a lot, they'll look at me and they'll see a picture of my headshot, and I've got a certain look of, I probably look quite posh, and then I open my voice and open my mouth and they hear my voice and they're like, whoa. And I remember that happened on The Village. And I'll never forget that. And not in just in a funny way. Like the lead actor, Rupert, he basically, you look at him and you just, you know, not stubbing him out. You think you are posh, mate. You know, I mean, you just look at someone and you think you are that person, perfect, you know. And we look very similar, but obviously we're so in a difference. And I was like, how are you doing, Rupert? You all right? You know what I mean? Shook his hand and he went, oh my God. You know what I mean? He was just like, bloody hell. He was just like, but loveliest guy, so supportive. You know, really nice guy, taught me a lot actually. And that's another one, don't judge people by the cut, do you know what I mean? Because again, he was really supportive and gave me a lot of encouragement and made me feel welcome to be on that set, which a lot of people do. Again, this is, you know, we've probably took a little negative tone there, but again, it's being real, innit? And I'm really glad you said that, and I'm glad I've told these stories, because I'm sure there's 100 and bloody million stories like this with people on sets where it's happened, and you think, oh, because it's the industry.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is, and it's wrong. You shouldn't teach people like that. So what I'll do is I'll find out a bit of information and I'll make sure I pass it on to people, and it'll definitely make me think more. But again, I'm fortunate to be sent things, and I've got family members and a very close friend who's a very clever solicitor. She just used to work for Liverpool, and now she's gone on and got this amazing job working for UEFA now, and I've often sent her stuff. And also shout out to my mate Bannell, who, funny enough, is, I met him through rugby, solicitor. Now he's starting to act, and I think he's just done the Edinburgh Fringe, so it'd be interesting to get him on. But he's, a few times I've sent him contracts, and he's just, you know, just, well, I couldn't afford him, you know, I can't afford to have that, yeah, you know, going. But
like
just to make sure
background.
I'm not signing my life away, because, again, I've done things in the past where I defo have, and there's images out there of me now that I know people are still making money off, and you know, I got paid 100 quid and got a free t-shirt out of it, and you think it's great at the start of your career because you think, oh, I'm on a picture or on a billboard somewhere, and then you think, hang on a minute, like,
I'm on a billboard
in blooming, you know, Bangladesh or China, and they're making thousands of pounds out of my image. And again, it's something, again, you learn as you go. But no, it's but again, I encourage people to make sure you do your research and stuff like that, because I've had to, and like I say, I'm still doing it now. And always, before you sign anything, just make sure that you have someone look over it, especially a third party.
Because the ideal thing, I think, as well, if stuff like a union, whether it be Equity or Bechtel or whatever it is that you have as representation, is the ideal thing is it kind of gives you, it's weird, you're paying people to make sure you get paid,
yeah,
and the equal treatment that you deserve, and they also help you out with guessing your rates. I don't know if it's similar with Equity, but with Bechtel, if I ever sit down with them, they can assess where I'm at with, like, experience and industry position for them to go, right, well, we think this would be a decent rate for you to be able to charge then, or this would be, like, a good point for you to go, right, this is what my time and energy is worth and all this lot. And it's just handy to have that a bit of help, because it's always very hit and miss. And I think the hardest point for a lot of us is getting that invoice. I've had clients that have refused to pay me, and, like, it's gone to a point where it's pissed me off so much to the point that I'm like, I'll happily pay someone to deal with it. It's just such a time waste.
It's a great point that, again, when I started off early doors, and again, I'm very, you know, sadly, I'm old school, me, and, you know, if I shake someone's hand and, you know, I expect that, you know, and, you know, a bit useless with technology and doing your own invoices and stuff like that. And again, I've probably not been paid for quite a lot of jobs, and I've not chased it up, and they probably thought, hang on a minute, we got away with that there. But again, I'm one of those people who, you know, I don't hold grudges, but I don't forget. So
yeah,
it means the next time I'm not going to work with you, and I am going to tell people. And this is what this is. This isn't why the podcast was made, so we can, you know, slag people off and, you know what I mean, and bitch about and moan about people. But it's something that's, you know, harsh reality is better than false hope. And to be honest, like, this is a big part of the industry which people don't see, you know.
They don't talk about it either.
And again, it's all hush hush. And again, you think, because it's, you know, these big productions and big brands, and you think, oh, well, it's just, and they use that, you know, oh, well, it's experience and you can put it on your CV. And it's like, well, yeah, you can put it on your CV, but that doesn't pay your bills, do you know what I mean?
And in most cases as well, is if it's that project there, it's like, yeah, that's a really cool project, but then if it doesn't get finished, it's like, it's a waste of time. You've put that time into something that you've not really reaped any benefit from and hasn't actually been finished. It's just like, well, what am I going to quote that as other than experience?
Yeah.
And even that is only so much of a benefit before,
well, that's
like,
it,
you know.
That's it, and I think we're at the point now where, you know, we have been doing it long enough now, so it's like, you know, and I think, like anything, you know, someone puts the time in, you know, you deserve to be paid fairly. And it's not always happened, and like I say, if it means, again, I'll be a voice for it and yourself, then fair play to us, mate. And again, this next generation coming through, definitely, you know, make sure that you know what you're doing, and, you know, and again, like I say, the experience, you know, again, if you've not done something, don't be demanding, you know, this much and whatever, because again, that's not going to happen, you're not going to get paid that. A lot of the time, you know, people don't have big budgets and stuff like that. And again, like I say, I've done, and I implore people to do stuff for free. I still do stuff for free, and I think I always will, because again, those really good projects, and a lot of them like short films or music videos, you know, they don't have the budget to. And again, that's where you can gain your experience and learn. But when you're working with these big companies and big brands and whatever, like, yeah, they do have the budget and,
yeah,
you know,
they
definitely bloody do. And someone else is getting that money. Do you know what I mean?
A good counter-argument for that as well is short films. I do completely agree with. Doing those for free is more of a benefit because it's more or less like, if you've got a solid team behind it and people you trust were like, are sure going to have that as a finished goal, all well and good. But I'd say when it comes down to projects, like I said, for corporate stuff, always give a price to it.
Mm.
The worst thing I had is I found a lot of bands terrible for this, but they'll have like a potential gig and they'll turn around and go, oh no, well, we're fine just doing it for some drinks and whatnot. It's the worst thing to do,
yeah,
because that's pretty much saying you are not professional in any stretch of the imagination. Mm. You still see yourselves as amateur enough just to get a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
You should always, if it's that type of situation, if it's a gig or for a company or a corporate business or whatever, whether you're an artist, a musician or a filmmaker or actor, anything, always put a price on it. Never turn around and offer free.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where it's like, if they go, right, well, that's a bit out of our budget, you go, well, what is your budget then? And then do a reduced rate. But you never, ever, ever suggest free unless it is a worst case scenario, and then you have to assess whether it's worth it for the long term connection.
Definitely.
Because if you turn around and say, oh, I don't mind doing it for free, they're like, no. Then that's like, you come across as desperate or inexperienced.
Mm.
And if you're inexperienced, they're like, I don't want to give you something that's worth $2,000 to do on this shoot if you're going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
It's a really weird middle line. You can't undersell and you can't oversell.
Yeah, you've got to be, that's the thing with me. I'm very open and honest, and it's end of the day, like, it's, and it's funny enough, it happened recently. I'm making another documentary for my friend, and it's so difficult because it is for a friend, and you know what he's doing, it's for the community and stuff like that, and I wish I could do it for free, but again, I've got to pay the bills, and again, it's taken a lot of my time. And again, to be honest, I've really kind of, if it was anyone else, they'd charge probably four times what I've invoiced him for. But again, that's what I've said to him. And again, for me, that's, he's getting that time. Mm. And even now, I think you're thinking about it, I know I've lowballed myself, but again, that's something that's, is a passion project, and I know it's helping the community. And I really, I wish I could do it for free. I really wish I could, but I can't. Again, I can't, because I've done that in the past, and at the end of,
for the time and energy, yeah, do you know what I mean? And again, have a return from it.
You've got to just, like I say, just to survive, basically. And in the future, I'd definitely charge a hell of a lot more. But I'm at that point now in my career where I can choose, and like I say, I've got a certain rate, and there's a reason I've got that rate. It's because my agent's got me that, and he's brilliant, and I love him for that. But I'm at that point, if I'm passionate about it, I will come down, because if I, I feel like it's worth doing it. And something like this, it was so difficult, because normally it's an actor or a model, whereas this, I'm actually making the film, so it was really difficult to kind of give him a number that I knew he could afford, but also difficult, mate. And but again, it's, you live and learn, and do you know what I mean? And again, I'm really proud to be doing it. I'm shooting the first, well, I've shot quite a bit of it so far. I'm shooting another bit on Saturday, and then there'll be a couple more other dates. And then obviously, like I say, the way I've done it is like, I'm editing it for free, and you're just paying for my time on, 10 hours, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not a lot of money at all. But again,
we're working out hourly rates. It's such a ball, like, because then you get to that point where you have to look yourself in the mirror. You're like, how much am I worth?
Well, that's it, isn't it? You have to have that conversation, don't you? But mate, this has been absolutely quality, mate.
No,
it's been so good. I really appreciate you.
I feel we've touched on some good topics and points there, because it's quite a minefield, some of the stuff in the industry that people either worry about talking about, because it's one of these things. It's delicate to talk about, but it's something that does need to be talked about.
It 100% does, and this is why I don't edit it, I don't script it. This is a normal conversation. And again, I wish I would have done the hour and a half we did beforehand, but I think it's probably a good reason we didn't do that, because then we probably wouldn't have got onto these topics now.
Because
we've got a lot of the chit-chat and whatever, say small talk, or just general catching up on how we're doing, which, don't get me wrong, is important, but like I say, I think we've captured some really cool content here, mate, and I think this will help a lot of people, and I hope you enjoy it. So
do a dating in the industry episode.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Well, like I say, we'll hopefully do what I'm going to do one when I defo do a video in set, and do one with everyone.
Yeah.
But also, like I say, we'll defo get you back on. later down the line and just see how you're getting on.
That'd be quite interesting because you'd have a mixture of different opinions from like ages and years of experience in different fields as well.
Exactly. And I think that's I just think that's the way forward.
Yeah. No, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you
mate, honestly, really appreciate it, brother. Nice one, man.
Cool.